9228. Okay, let's begin learning Torah. We're beginning Parak Bamim at Lincoln. Last time we gave a bit of a hakdama to Hadlokas Neros Shabbos, which I think will be relevant as we go on. But what I want to discuss now is just briefly the Seder of the Prakim in Meseches Shabbos. So what order do the Prakim and Shabbos begin with? So if you tell me that the first parak comes before the second parak, which comes before the third parak, like, that's not what we're asking. Is there any rhyme or reason to the order of the Prakim here in Meseches Shabbos? Anyone? So Tosas on Beis, the Aleph speaks about it, and the Ritva here speaks about it. And they both say the same type of thing. Any of you saw the sources? Was this not... I think this was on the original source sheet, no? And towards the end, on the original source sheet. Anyone saw this? And me? Huh? Okay. Well, so let's just look at the Tosas on Beis Amud Aleph, because we all have it. Remember, Peret Maseches Shabbos begins with Yitzios HaShabbos, which is about Hotza'ah. Then the second parak is about Hadlakas Neros. Then the third parak is about, like, Bishon the Shabbos. Then the fourth parak is about Hatmana, right? And then you have Bame Isha, Bame Behema, which is, like, the details in Hotza'ah, what can you carry, what can't you carry. So Taisus quotes Hitcha Riva. The Riva, as we know, is the first of the Bali HaTaisus. He died in 1133. We have no idea when he was born, but he probably was born at some point. So the Riva asks Akasha, Didini Hotzos Hayol Lushanos Gabe Avos Malachos Achar Perek Kla Gadol, the Hosung Tani Avos Malachos Abom Chos Achas Uktani Hotzos Olubasov. Vale Lahaso Kasei de Bidram de Maisi Be'er Shabbos Mimba Odium, Gon Lo Yitze Achai Be'machus Samokashaycha in Shurim Dari Smonova in So the kasha that Taisus is asking is that the first parak of Shabbos, which is about Hotza'ah, should really come after the seventh parak, because Hotza'ah is one of the malachos. It's malacha number 39 of the 39 malachos, so it really should come at the very end. How come it comes first? And Taisus gives various answers, and the answers that Taisus gives basically amount to the fact that Hotza'ah is a malacha gerua. It's a malacha that doesn't involve any change in an item. That's the way the Arzara understands it. And because Hotza'ah is a malacha gerua, we want to say it first. But that's like a detail. What emerges from the middle of this Tosis is that Perek Bamim Adlikin is going to be before the Perek of Kira and before Hatmana. Because Bamim Matlikin is about lighting candles. And we light candles on Erev Shabbos. And even after Erev Shabbos, even after, let's say, we light candles, what, 18 minutes before Shkia? Even after that, you can still do certain activities. For example, Hatmana, right? Hatmana means like insulating food on Shabbos. Right? So Hatmana is Usser on Shabbos, but Hatmana is Mutter during Bein HaShemashos. So what we have is Bamim Matlikin first, because that's 18 minutes before Shkia, let's say. But that's not Bein HaShemashos. Bein HaShemashos begins already at Shkia. So Hatmana and Kira, all of these Prakim, Parak 3 and 4, comes after, because that's permitted during Bein HaShemashos. And then afterwards, we talk about the Malachos, which are only Usher on Shabbos itself. So what Tosas is saying is the same chiddush that we have in every history book, right? This is something that Dr. Schatz used to always say at family simchas, that, not always, but like one time he gave a speech at a family simcha, which is, with the amazing kasha, how come the Revolutionary War in every history book comes before the War of 1812? You ever thought of this kasha? How come the Revolutionary War is always before the War of 1812? The answer is, the history books go in chronological order. Right? So far, so good? 1776 is before 1812? Well, Maseches Shabbos goes in chronological order. Because Bamim Matlikin is before Shabbos starts. 18 minutes before Shkia, you light your candles. And then Hatmana and Kira are halachos of cooking on Shabbos. You gotta start it, right? beforehand, but if you didn't start until Bein HaShemashos, that's still going to be okay for Hatmana. We allow Hatmana during Bein HaShemashos. So therefore we have those after Hadlakas Neros. And then afterwards, we get into the stuff that's only relevant on Shabbos itself. Like the Malachos. So the Yesod is that Maseches Shabbos goes in chronological order. That's what the first Tosis in the Masechta says, and the first Ritva in our Perek says, everybody knows I wrote this in the first Perek of Shabbos. The problem is we don't actually have the Ritva on the first couple of Daf of Shabbos. It's like missing from the manuscript. That's not uncommon, no? That manuscript's like cut off. You miss at the beginning, you miss at the end. It just makes sense. So the basic idea is that Masechta Shabbos goes in chronological order, and Bamed Madlikin is before Hatmana, because you light candles and it's not Shabbos yet. Right? Make sense? Beautiful?
So why did we say
Yetzias first? So Yetzias or Shabbos is first, because Yetzias or Shabbos is just this tremendous chiddush that carrying doesn't malacha at all. Because carrying doesn't involve any change to the substance. That's what Balei HaTaisis call malacha gerua. Every other malacha, there's a change. If I do tochein, I take a substance and I grind it, there's a change. If I do makeh b'patish, there's a change. If I am osa shtei batei nirin, by the way, you have to be extremely talented to violate that one on Shabbos, right? If you do osa shtei batei nirin, you're making a change. You're like working on your loom and you're developing something. So whenever there's a change, that's a malacha. Hotza'a, carrying, there is no change to the substance. There is a change of location. That's what the Balei HaTosfos call a malacha geruah, because that's such a chiddush, that's why it comes first. That's the first Tosfos in the Masechta.
So why would the parak about what could the woman go out with not be after the first?
Because that comes actually, and the Balei HaTosfos speak about this on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, those are things that come up right before Shabbos, because you're not allowed to go out a few minutes before Shabbos even, right? Or during Bein HaShemashos, you can't go out with these things because you might carry them on actual Shabbos. So that's also a little bit before the actual Shabbos. That's why those prakim come earlier. That's what the Balei HaTosfos say. Now, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in this book, the Mincha Shlomo, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has the following insight in the Tosis. He says, one second. Tosis is saying that Bamed Madlikin comes before, let's say, Hatmana, because Bamed Madlikin is before Shabbos. But is that true? We have a din in Simen Resh Samach Gimel Se'if Yod, the din of the Bahag. The Bahag says that when you light Shabbos candles, you accept Shabbos on yourself, and it becomes Shabbos after. No? And therefore the Mishnah Berurah writes that you can't daven mincha after you light Shabbos candles. No? This is because you light candles, it becomes Shabbos. Well, hold it! Rav Shlomo Zalman scratches his head. He says, what's going on here? If it becomes Shabbos after I light my Shabbos candles, so then presumably you can't do Hatmana anymore. Hatmana is only permitted when it's questionable whether it's Shabbos, Bein HaShemashos. But if I lit candles and it actually becomes Shabbos according to the Bahag, so then Hatmana is forbidden. So now we're back to our question, why is Bamed Madlikin before the Perek of Hatmana? This is Rav Shlomo Zalman's kasha. You guys didn't get those sources? No, none of you looked at the Bahag in Simen Resh Samach Gimel Sif Yod? You did look at it.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, we have one winner. Ding, ding, ding. But, at least
yeah,
two. You probably looked at it with you.
But there was a part where it said that you could keep them alive.
Ah! So, Reb Shlomo Zalman answers, well, maybe this is a proof that you can make a t'nai when you light candles that you're not really accepting Shabbos. And therefore, right, it's still before, you could still do your Hatmana after, because you're making a condition, and that's going to be okay. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests. Now, this is actually two opinions in the Rishonim. It's Machlokes in the Kolbo and the other Rishonim, whether a T'nai helps. Rav Shlomo Zalman is inclined that you see that a mitnai helps just from the seder of the prakim here. Ms. Kelman.
Although, if you're using a mitnai like Ashkila, meaning even if you want to say it works, is it something that you would do every Shabbos, someone says it in the community?
Right, so, I mean, that's very difficult. L'cha'ora, you can't make the tnai every Shabbos. We pass and you can only make a tnai for a dvar mitzvah, no? You can't make a tnai when you light candles that you want to watch the news, even the real news, right? You can't make it such a tnai. That was a joke, by the way. Yeah.
What's a dvar mitzvah? Meaning, if you're doing it so you can do hatmana to prepare for Shabbos, that's...
So hatmana might be considered dvar mitzvah, that's correct. But I don't know if... I mean, what Ms. Coleman is saying is, I don't know if like, you can make a tnai every single week. Like, at some point we'd say, you know, like, just get things right. It's kind of difficult. Now, it seems to me that the better answer to Rav Shlomo Zalman's kasha is that the Bahag is... Who was the Bahag? When and where did he live? He lived after Moshe Rabbeinu, before Moshe Feinstein, so far so good. And... The Bahag is not exact. We're not exactly sure who he was, but he was one of the Gaon, and part of Rabbi Hudai Gaon. And the Bahag doesn't really have proof from the Gemara that you accept Shabbos when you light candles. It might be something that the Gaonim instituted in his time, perhaps. We'll talk a little bit more in a few minutes about Hadlakas Neir Shabbos and the Gaonim, but the idea of the Bahag might be something that's post-Talmudic. And maybe Medina de Gemara, when I light candles on Friday, I am not accepting Shabbos. We don't really pasken like the Bahag. In fact, Lahalacha, we treat the Bahag as a chumrah. And that's why the minhag developed that when women light Shabbos candles, they don't do malacha after. But if a man is lighting Shabbos candles, you're allowed to do malacha after. Why is that? So one approach would be Judaism is sexist. That's one approach. But assuming that we want to say something that's probably truer to form, it's because the minhag of accepting Shabbos was a min that the women accepted. Women generally light candles more often than men. We'll probably discuss why at some point. And when men light candles, they never accepted on themselves the Bahag. They never accepted this chumrah, which is a post-Talmudic chumrah. Now, if the pshat is that we don't really hold like the Bahag, then the seder of the prakim makes a little more sense. Now, I just want to talk for a few minutes about this Bahag, because it's important for halacha. Two points that are made that we can discuss in the Bahag. Point one is what's considered a mitzvah. You know, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in the Shemir Shabbos, these dinim are found in Volume 2 of the Shemir Shabbos in Parak Mem Gimel. Rav Shlomo Zalman contends that it's only called a mitzvah if it's something you really have to do. So he says you're not allowed to light candles and make a tnai in order to daven at the Kotel. Right? Because you don't really have to daven at the Kotel.
Yeah, but now, you don't say to daven.
What?
It's still davening, though.
It's still davening, but I could daven at home if I want.
You're saying
Daven
like Kabbalah Shabbos.
Could Daven Kabbalah Shabbos
at the court? If it was Mincha, would it be different?
If it was, so Davening Mincha, we'll talk about now. The Mishnah Berurah passes that if a person, if a woman lights candles on Friday, she should not Daven Mincha afterwards. Not Daven the Friday Mincha afterwards. Instead, you should Daven two Shemona Esrei's Ma'ariv. That's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, like, one second, like, isn't it a mitzvah to daven? Mincha can't make a tnai for...
Also, paying not to touch the women if it's on purpose.
So, it's not really on purpose, because the halacha is constraining me. The halacha is, like, handcuffing
me. You could daven it earlier in the day.
Well, I could have davened earlier in the day, but I didn't. I was busy. I was... Whatever. I didn't daven earlier in the day. I would daven now, but now it is... Now... Rav Shlomo Zalman argues that when the Mishnah Berurah makes this point, he's talking about a situation when you're lighting candles really late in the day, and therefore you don't have time to both light candles and daven mincha. If not, you could make a tznai, and it's like for a dvar mitzvah, and light candles and daven mincha, or daven mincha first and light candles. What's the honest? How long does it take to daven mincha? Right? Without all the deep kavanas. Right? It doesn't take that long. Right? So, if you have a little more time, you could do it that way and light candles a few minutes later. Now, this is actually an interesting question to think about. The minhag of many women is that they don't daven ma'ariv regularly, correct? Do any of you daven ma'ariv regularly? Wow! You guys are super from. That's awesome! Rav Soloveitchik actually felt that women should daven ma'ariv. You see, the Rav was medayik in the Rambam, that the Rambam holds that all three tefillos a day basically are the same, and women should daven ma'ariv. The practice developed, I guess, in other communities outside of this classroom, that many women don't daven ma'ariv regularly. Is that correct? Now, so let's say you're a woman who doesn't daven ma'ariv regularly, and now you missed mincha on Friday. So can you daven tashlumen? Right, tashlumen is always a rider. First you daven the real chiyuv, and then you make up for the one that you missed. Well, one second. When do I daven? Right? Can I daven tashlumen? Now, tashlumen also be paskin. It has to be betfila hasmucha. Right? So, if I don't daven ma'ariv, so could I daven tashlumen for mincha at shachris? Because that's my next tefila. Or do I say, no, I don't daven at shachris because it has to be the next tefila and I don't have the next tefila. Or, right, do I say that maybe in this case, ma'ariv becomes a full-fledged obligation for me, even though it's not usually obligatory for me, but now it becomes obligatory to make up for the mincha? There are three different possibilities. Right? Yes, no, or maybe. Right? There are three different possibilities over here about what you do. I wrote an article about this in the Beis Yitzchok, volume 32, page 478. Not that I remember it, I just looked it up a few minutes ago. But the... it's not so clear. Reb Sraya Dublitsky, who just passed away, felt that you should, if you want, you could daven tashlumen after shachris. Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach has soser himself on this point. Reb Schechter told me that he felt that davening ma'ariv in this situation becomes a full-fledged chiyuv to make up for your mincha. And that's already... there's a lot to say about that question. That's just another question to discuss. Now, within the Bahag, there's a further question. Once you light candles, you should not daven mincha. So the Ketzos HaShulchan is Reb Avram Chaim Doneh. He was the Lubavitcher Posek of Yerushalayim who live in Shkunat HaBukharim. He has all the kulos. So like, you know, the big shirm is always the Chazanish, the small shirm is Reb Chaim Doneh. So that's the same Reb Chaim Doneh. So in the Ketzos HaShulchan, Simen Ayin Vav, Os Yud Aleph, he discusses, when you light candles, does it become that you accepted Tosefes Shabbos? Or does it become that you accepted the actual Shabbos? See, in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, so the Alter Rebbe distinguishes that if I accept Tosefes Shabbos, so it's not the full-fledged Shabbos, I can still ask someone to do malachos for me. But if I accept full-fledged Shabbos, then I can't. Right? And the Alter Rebbe says, once you daven ma'ariv and you answer Baruch Hu, so then it's full-fledged Shabbos. You can't ask anyone else to do malachos for you. So the Ketzos HaShulchan discusses, what about if you light candles, does that become full-fledged Shabbos, or does that become Tosefes Shabbos? That's his question. Not abundantly clear. He works very hard on it. The fourth point I want to make within the Bahag is like this. The fourth point to make within the Baha'i is, according to the Baha'i, what is considered accepting Shabbos? Is it lighting the candles or is it making the bracha? Did any of you Did you ever watch women that don't blow out the match after they light their candles? Like, our practice is that we make the bracha after the candles are lit, and then we, like, put our hands over our eyes, right? That's, like, standard Jewish practice, no? So, did any of you see women who don't blow out the match? At least one, two.
Yes, in Africa they do it, but I think it's because they don't know.
What?
They do that in South Africa, but I think it's just because they don't know. They just, like, assume it's
Shabbos. So, well, it's because they don't know. It could be that there's a real reason not to blow out the match. Because they accepted Shabbos when they lit the candle. Now, Rabbi Kiva Eger points out that, let's say you have 46 kids and you're lighting 48 candles for covered Shabbos or something, you don't accept Shabbos until candle number 48 is lit, so the last candle. But maybe the lighting of the candles is the Kabbalah Shabbos. Alternatively, maybe the Kabbalah Shabbos is not the lighting of the candles, maybe the Kabbalah Shabbos is the bracha. Kabbalah Shabbos, does it have to be verbal, or is mental Kabbalah Shabbos enough? Does Kabbalah Shabbos mean that I stop doing malacha? Or does Kabbalah Shabbos mean that I accept Shabbos verbally? If you assume it's the bracha, that would be more along the lines of the Levush, that Kabbalah Shabbos has to be verbal, and therefore the Levush entertains the idea that maybe there's Hataras Nedarim on Kabbalah Shabbos. I just thought this is like awesome. Right? Let's say I accept Shabbos, and then I realize that I forgot to, I don't know, you know, who knows what. But I accepted Shabbos. So you could go to the rabbi and be Matar Neder and get out of your acceptance of Shabbos. But that's only if Kabbalah Shabbos is verbal, because Hataras Nedarim only helps for verbal things. It doesn't really help when you do a Maisa to accept the Shabbos. So that's a discussion as well. The last point I want to make is just, we spoke a minute ago about a mitzvah. The Mishnah Berurah has one line over here in Reish Samach Gimel Sif Yud in the Shaar HaTzion. The Mishnah Berurah has a line that you're only allowed to make a condition if you hold the condition works within the Bahag. You can only make a condition for a mitzvah, and taking a shower on Friday is not a mitzvah, the Mishnah Berurah says. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, if you look at the Lashon HaRambam, the Rambam says it's a good idea to shower before Shabbos, but it's not like a full-fledged chiyuv. Whoa. This changes my entire life, no? It's like totally, everything is like totally different now. Okay, so this is basically what I wanted to mention just within the Bahag, because the Bahag is important, and it comes up here in terms of understanding this first Ritva and the Seder HaPrakim within Masechet Shabbos. One other point I want to make, any other questions about the Bahag, or should we go on in Judaism? More Judaism? Anyone? Okay, let's go weiter. Now, who was the first person who made a bracha on Hadlakas Neir Shabbos? What's the original source? Last time we learned, we spoke about how there were Rishonim who didn't make brachos on Hadlakas Neir Shabbos for a variety of reasons. And nonetheless, our practice is that we make a bracha when we light Shabbos candles. What's the earliest source to make a bracha on Hadlakas Neir Shabbos? Look in the Taisus. The earliest source. Taisus Chafayim and Beis. Who is it? Anyone? It's towards the end of the Tosfos. I'm like giving too many hints here. Tosfos on Chaf Hei Amud Beis Yom HaShechova. The Tosfos that we spoke about last time. It's like seven lines before the end of the Tosfos, just to give everything away. Anyone? So the earliest source is the Seder of Reb Amram Gon. The Seder of Reb Amram Gon lived between 810 and 875. He was the Gon of Sura. And he wrote what's probably the first Seder in Judaism. the Seder for Bamram Gon, right? Sidurim were in common. People used to daven. Basically, different communities had different texts, and people davened however they wanted. The Gemara doesn't really give a Nusach HaTfilah about very much. There's a couple of Birchas HaShachar found in the Gemara Menachos. There's like a teeny bit in Meseches Tamid. There's very little in terms of the text of Tfilah. So the Seder of Amram Gon is the first Seder. And the Seder of Amram Gon has a bracha for Adlachas Neir Shabbos. So, what does this mean? So Rav Shechter has the following suggestion, in that, I think I gave you a Amar Makom in a book called Rav Shechter on the Moadim, pages 3 to 13. I noticed, I don't think they have it here in the Beit Midrash upstairs. But it's not like such a hard book to get.
What? Huh?
The green one. Right? It just came out like last year. So, Rav Shechter develops the idea as follows. Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik has an article in Volume 2 of Collected Writings where he basically says that the Rambam is supposed to make sense. Does everyone agree with that so far? Rambam's supposed to make sense. Now, Dr. Soloveitchik noted that his father said that there's two things he doesn't understand in the Rambam. Right? This is like the Rav said, there are two things he doesn't get in terms of the location. How come Hilchos Avelos is found in Shoftim? How come Hilchos Mila is found in Ahava? These are the two questions that the Rav had in general structure. So Dr. Soloveitchik tries to answer his father's kasha. He says, you know, whenever you have a structure and you have to fit things into different books, there's always going to be stuff that doesn't fit in well. Like Shulchan Aruch Chaim makes sense. You go through the day, right? And then you go through the year. Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat makes sense. It's halachos of money. Shulchan Aruch Evan HaEzer makes sense. It's halachos of matrimony. Shulchan Aruch Yeridaya doesn't really make any sense. How come in the same book you have the laws of Shatnez and the laws of Kibbud Av Ve'Em and the laws of Kashrus? Like, is there any link between them? So, sometimes things don't make sense. Because if you have a limited number of books and you have to shtup things into books, so you just have like your dumping ground. That's the first point. But Dr. Soloveitchik notes the question he had been bothered by for many, many, many years is how come within certain halachos of the Rambam, how come there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for the Seder within certain halachos. And Hilchos Shabbos seems to have no rhyme or reason. Ready? Perek Aleph of Hilchos Shabbos gives us all the general rules. Right? What is a malacha? What's a malacha she'en etzricha legufa? What is an av? What is a tolda? What's a psik resha? All of the overarching categories, that's Perek Aleph of Shabbos. Perek Beis of Shabbos is pikuach nefesh. So far, it makes sense, no? You have to have overarching laws of Shabbos, and then you have like Pekuach Nefesh, just to show you how important Shabbos is. Well, Perek Gimel of Shabbos tells us that you're allowed to start a Malacha Erev Shabbos and have it continue on Shabbos. I could turn on my sprinkler on Friday, and it will continue to water the grass all Shabbos, and that's fine. And Perek Dalet of Hilchos Shabbos tells me about Hatmana. And Perek Hei of Shabbos tells me about Hadlakas Haner. Right? And you don't really get to Malachos on Shabbos. And Perek Vav tells me about Amira L'Nachri. And you don't really get to Malachos of Shabbos until Perek Zayin. Now, you would think that if you're writing a book about Hilchos Shabbos, maybe Perek Aleph makes sense, maybe Perek Beis makes sense, but then wouldn't you have Malachos? And don't tell me the Rambam is following the order of Shas, because the Rambam isn't following the order of Shas, because the order of Shas has Hadlakas Neiros before Hatmana. And the Rambam has it the opposite way. So, like, what the heck is going on, dear Rambam? That's basically Dr. Salvation's question. He probably asked in a more respectful way, but that's the point. So, Dr. Soloveitchik has the following theory, that the first six prakim of Hilchos Shabbos are a response to the Karaites. The Rambam didn't like Karaites. Did I point this out? One of my friends, my chavrusa, when I was in YU, had a sister who was studying in Midrashah Taruva, I believe. And one Shabbos, she walked into this new synagogue that she had never been in, and she really liked it, and she became a Karaite. There's a Karaite synagogue right near Yeshiva Takotel over there. You know what I'm talking about? It takes talent to become a Karaite. There's like three of them left on the planet. Right? It's not like such a popular thing.
Okay.
What can you do? Right? Actually, his parents are like really destroyed over this one for good reason. Like, you hear that your kid flips out and you don't expect that your kid becomes a Karaite. There, you know, you're not allowed to have any candles burning on Shabbos. Right? It's kind of like super duper chumrah, like, I mean, whatever. Okay, that's what happened. She became a Karaite. Now, there aren't too many Karaites left, though. I think that Karaite synagogue in the old city doesn't get a minion easily. That's my understanding.
Do they carry a minion?
I have no idea. But, I mean, why do you have a Karaite synagogue? It's not like in Torah Shabbat Ksav at all. The answer is that Karaites aren't only into Torah Shabbat Ksav. They just developed their own Torah Shabbat Pen. It's like just not our tradition. So the Rambam, after Perek Aleph of Hilchos Shabbos, which gives us all the klolim, that makes perfect sense. The Rambam, however, decides that he wants to respond to the Karaites. The Karaites felt that Pekuach Nefesh does not override Shabbos. Hence, Perek Beis of Shabbos tells me Pekuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos. Perek Gimel of Shabbos talks about starting a malacha on Friday and have it continuing over Shabbos. Karaites felt you can't do that. You can't turn on your sprinkler on Friday and have it go over Shabbos. Perek Dalet, Hatmana, the Karaites didn't do that. Perek K, Hadlakas Neros on Shabbos. Well, the Karaites felt you're not allowed to have any fire burning on Shabbos. You can't start something on Friday and have it continue. Perek Vav of Shabbos, Amir al-Nachri. The Karaite said, well, you can't do that, because the halacha of Shabbos is you can't have any malacha done for you. So the Rambam, according to Dr. Soloveitchik, is organizing Hilchos Shabbos based on responding to the Karaites. Why is this important? So Rav Schechter goes to the next stage. Rav Schechter says, you know what? Since halachas near Shabbos was something that was done by Orthodox Jews, by rabbinite Jews, to show that the Karaites are wrong. In order to really show that they're wrong, they said, make a bracha on it. The earliest source to make a bracha, halal davaru, the earliest source is in the Gaonim. And then they have to, in other words, until Reb Amram Goyin, we don't know anyone who made a bracha on Hadlakas Neir Shabbos. And the Rishonim have to work very hard. How come you make a bracha? The Gemara calls it Chova, right? Chova usually means you don't make a bracha. The answer is what Reb Schechter says. Again, only Reb Schechter could get away with this. If I would say this, they'd accuse me of being an apikoros. But what Reb Schechter is arguing is the Hadlakas Neir Shabbos gets a bracha dafka to show the Karaites are wrong. That is argument. I think it's really interesting. I have no way of knowing if it's absolutely correct or not. You have to really do a lot of history. But look there in Rav Schechter and the Moedim, pages 3 to 13, where he makes this point. So far, so good? Okay, now I think we're ready to learn. Okay, let's go through the Gemara. Bame madlikin ubame ein madlikin. So what are you allowed to use, and what can't you use? What's the Mishnah discussing? Use for what?
Wicks
and oils, right? So the Mishnah says, which wicks and oils can you use? Which wicks and oils can't you use? What's the reason why there are certain wicks and oils that I should not use? So I sent you to look at a Gemara on Chof Aleph, like 15 lines from the top. Let's look at that Gemara for a second. Amar Rabba, Psilo Shamur Chachamim Eimad Likin Ben B'Shabbos Mipnei Sha'ar Misachseches Bahen. The wicks that I can't use are because Ha'ar Misachseches Bahen. What does that mean? Flickers. Right? There's actually two opinions in Rashi. Either Misachseches means it's like a Sakin Paguma. It's like a knife. You know, when you do Shechita, the knife has to be perfectly smooth. If you have what are they called? serrations. Right? Is that the way you pronounce it? If the knife is serrated, so you can't use it for shechita, because there are five psulim of shechita. One of them is ikur. Ikur is when you rip the tusimanim. You have to cut tusimanim by an animal, at least, no? Cutting tusimanim is like the trachea in the esophagus. And cutting it means you have to cut it. If you rip it, ikur, that's pasul. So if the knife is serrated, it's really pasul, right? The big kibud they give you, if you ever go to a shlachtais, is they ask you to check the knife, no? The Gemara speaks about one of the Amorim, he said, check the knife on his tongue. Bad idea. You got to know what you're doing over there. But you can check a knife with your finger. It is a little bit scary the first couple of times you do it, like you're worried that you're going to give yourself a serious laceration. But, okay, you know, it takes talent. But one explanation in Rashi is that Ha'ar Mesachseches is that the fire is not straight, but the fire is like serrated, so to speak. The other explanation of Rashi, of Ha'ar Mesachseches Bahen, is Rashi says Mesachseches means like lichicha niro v'sichsicha avonov, in the sense of it's something that gets singed, but not burned. Right? The Gemara in Bava Kamma speaks about when a fire burns your field, and the field doesn't really get burned, in the sense of it doesn't catch fire, it just gets singed. Now there's like a thin black layer on the field that's burned. That's sichsucha avonov. The stones are like singed. So the second explanation of Rashi is that ha'ar misachseches bahen means that the fire doesn't really catch the wick, it just stays external to the wick. So basically, the reason I should not use these wicks, according to the Gemara, is because it's going to flicker. Either flicker because it's like a sakin paguma, because it's like a knife that has these serrations, or it's flickering that it didn't really catch. And the oils I should not use, the Gemara says, is because ein nimshachin achar hapsila, is because the oils don't get drawn into the wick well. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the concern with the wicks is that the wicks should not be used because it's misasetas, and therefore what? Misasetas. Right? And therefore what? What's going to happen if our misasetas bahen? What's the concern? What? It's going to begin to blow out, and I might tilt it. It's a gezeir shemiyata. I might, that's the way Rashi and Taisus learn, that basically you're not allowed to read La'ar Haner on Shabbos, because maybe you will tilt the candle to make it burn better. And if the Ar Misachseches Bahen, you might tilt it. That's the way Rashi and Taisus learn the Gemara. The Rambam, right, as we know, Rashi and Taisus, Judaism was a beautiful religion, but then the Rambam came, and the Rambam causes all the problems, and the Rambam says that, no, that's not the pshat. How does the Rambam learn to tell you? And you're going to leave the room. The Rambam says, because it's flickering, do you ever I have one of these now in my kitchen, that like the light isn't good, and it flicks, and like it hurts you, no? Like it bothers your eyes, you can't read, when the light is like,
it's like a strobe light.
It's like a 1970s disco. It's like the worst thing ever. Right? But the point is that you're not going to stay in a room where it's flickering, and you'll leave the room. And what's going to be the problem if I leave the room? What? I should be with the candles on Shabbos, no? Now, L'cha'ora, the Rambam's explanation, this Rambam is in the Perish HaMishnah. The Rambam in the Yad, the Rambam in the Halacha Sefer, sounds more like the reason of Rashi and Tosfos. But the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnah says that you're going to leave the room. That connects to which idea of Hadlakas Neros that we encountered earlier? Anyone? Ms. Muscat, louder?
Guitar, yeah, you can't use guitar, because then you'll be...
Huh? My hearing isn't great, I'm sorry.
You can't use the tar and the oil.
I can't use the tar because I might leave, and therefore, there's a chisaron in oneg Shabbos. Oneg means I'm supposed to eat my meal with the candle. Now, the Rambam, right, has both kavod and oneg. That's what we spoke about last time. The Gemara only says I might leave the room by the tar. The Rambam is taking that idea and is saying, no, no, that's the reason for all of the psulim of the psilos. All of the pusul licks for the Rambam is because of Shema Yetze. And the psul of Shema Yetze probably is more connected to the oneg idea. Right? For Rashi and Tosfos, the psul of the wicks is what we would call in Yiddish a zeitige psul. It's like a side thing. Maybe you'll tilt the candle. That's not like fundamental to have lachas neir Shabbos. It's just you might violate a malacha in general. But for the Rambam, it's more connected to the etzem din of hadlakas neiros. Does that sound reasonable? Okay. So that's the point. Again, we will try to discuss this further as we go through the Gemara. Okay, let's go. So the following things you should not... my son goes to this camp called Yagil during the summer, which is like this wilderness camp.
My brother did that for like 5 years.
When it's Yalozu becomes Yagilu. My son loves it. It's like the only place in the world he's like fully comfortable. So he told me that Tani Prero, who like runs the camp, this year would talk about Bamidbar Likin on Friday nights, and he brought in all of the items in Perek Bamidbar Likin to show people what they are. Okay? So if you would do show and tell, what is Lechesh? I'm not going to read the Gemara inside. What is Lechesh? Anyone? Eliana?
It's like the stuff in cedar wood
between the bark and the actual wood. There's like a white little fibery thingamajinga over there, and that is called lechesh. So far, so good? Tysus asks Akasha, why does the Mishnah have to pass on lechesh, if it's that thingamajinga inside the bark? Rima has the same idea later on about the stuff inside aravels. I have no idea what that means. I know what an aravel looks like, no? Is there white stuff inside or like little fibers inside the aravels? I have no idea. What? Yeah, we should like make a field trip to your local Orthodox synagogue and look at an aravel, right? But not exactly sure what it is, but the Gemara later on speaks about this within our Rav. So Tosfos asks Akasha, why does the Mishnah have to say it's a problem? Don't we know later on in the Perek we learned that kol hayotze min ha'etz, right, that anything that leaves, anything that comes out of wood, e madlikin bahen, elo pishton, only flax. Everything else that's yotze min ha'etz is puzzle. So why does the Mishnah have to say lechesh specifically? That's Tysus's question. How does Tysus answer?
We don't learn.
Ain't lemaidim and klolos. Now this is already a razzle dazzle idea because this sort of undermines all of Judaism. I mean, like ain't lemaidim and klolos. Okay, so like whenever you have a general rule, right? It says I don't know. Pick your rule, and yeah, ain't lemaidim. There could be exceptions. Who knows? Like, that sort of would really undermine everything. So many Rishonim, if you look in the Rashba, the Ritva over here, they give real reasons why you would think Lechesh is different than the regular rule of Ein Lameidim and Aklalos. The Ritva writes that apparently the practice used to be that they used this Lechesh to make wicks. It was like a standard wick-making material. Because it is a standard wick-making material, therefore you would think you're allowed to use it. That's the Ritva. Okay. The Rashba says differently that kol hayotze min ha'etz means things that come out of wood al yedei some sort of work. That you have to, like, bang it, you have to, like, do something to get it to come out. the lechesh, you don't have to really do anything to come out. You just have to peel. Right? It's there. You just have to separate the bark from the wood and just like peel it off. It doesn't require any effort to get it out. That's what the Rashba says. And in the Sefer Yad Malachi, the Yad Malachi is a book on Klolim, the Yad Malachi is bothered with Tosis. Tosis, how come you're telling me, in Lamedim in HaKlolos, we don't say that unless you have a real reason to say that. You can't say that idea without a Svara. And therefore the Yad Malachi basically says, yeah, Tosis is disagreeing with that, but Judaism doesn't hold of Tosis. In the footnotes on the new Tosis, Rehazok in the Talmido, Ofek. Actually, they sell their books now on the Koran website. The Ofek thing. Actually, my father paid for this volume. That's the only reason I have it. So in that Ofek edition, the Tosis Rehazokim Talmido, in the footnotes over there, they point out that if you look in all the other versions of Tosis, they say the same as the Rashba and the Ritva. They give reasons. And therefore, even our Tosis, Tosis isn't saying Inla made him in that Kolos just what the heck. Tosis also holds to the reasons. It's just sometimes Tosis wrote in a shorter sort of way. Okay, this isn't so exciting. This is only important because the Rishonim discuss, are you allowed to light Shabbos candles with cotton wicks? Do any of you know how cotton grows? Huh? It's like a flower, and you have like a green thing, and you see the white like bud on the top of it, and that is called cotton. If you drive on the highway between Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim, they have lots of cotton fields over there. It's like a common... So the Rishonim are bothered by the kasha that maybe kol hayotzim in ha'etz eim adikindo should mean that you can't light with cotton wicks. This is like basic in Judaism, no? Wicks are made out of cotton. But maybe cotton is called an eitz. Why would cotton be called an eitz? Because the halacha distinguishes between annuals and perennials. Right? In other words, what do I make a bracha borei pri ha'etz on? What do I make a bracha borei pri ha'adama on? So the Gemara Ketan Mevarchim says something that's hard to understand, right? The Ilona Asagavza, we don't know exactly what that means, and there's like four different opinions in Rishonim, but the standard approach that's taken is that if something is an annual, annual means you plant it every year, correct? Any of you study botany?
Bananas are.
What?
Bananas.
Bananas! Right? A banana tree dies every year, right? Hence, bananas are a borei pri ha'adama, correct? A papaya is an interesting thing because it's not really a full-fledged botanical tree. What else? Blueberries. Are blueberries annuals or perennials? Blueberries are ha'etz. Why? They last year to year. No? It's pretty basic. Again, there wasn't Magen Avraham who thought that blueberries are ha'adama because they grow low to the ground within Lovewood. But that Magen Avraham has been rejected by Poskim, and it's not true about our blueberries anymore. Basically, annuals versus perennials. Cotton plants are perennials. Therefore, the Rishonim are bothered by Akasha, shouldn't it be usher to use cotton for wicks for Neir Shabbos, because it's a problem of Kol Hayotze Min Ha'etz. The answer that's given is what the Rashba says over here. Okay, who wants to plug this one in? Talia? It comes, it's Yotze means you have to extract it. Right? Cotton, you just pick it. Right? You pick a bale of cotton. I know we're not allowed to sing the song anymore. But pick a bale of cotton means you just like, you extract it. You just pull it off. Right? I mean, you don't have to extract it. You just pick it. You just pluck it. It just comes. Right? It doesn't involve any effort. So therefore, virtually all Rishonim say that cotton is kosher hadlakas neiris based on the Rashba's explanation here of the Tosis. If you look in the Yoreim, in Mitzvah Reish Ayin Dalet, Mitzvah Reish Ayin Dalet basically, who was the Yoreim? When and where did he live? Let's go like that.
after Moshe Rabbeinu, before Moshe Maimonides.
Correct. Good. Right. Let's be more precise, though.
Even after the Rambam.
What?
So
the Yeraim was the student of Rabbeinu Tam, who filtered the ideas of Rabbeinu Tam differently than the rest of the Baalei HaTosafos. The Yeraim is Rabbi Elazar Metz. Metz is in Germany. Culturally, it's in Germany. Even at the time when Metz was in France, it had German culture, whatever that means, not for now. Rabbi Elazar Metz, some assume that he's a prototype Chassid Ashkenaz, but Rabbi Elazar Metz, basically, the Yeraim, wrote a sefer on all the mitzvahs, and the mitzvah Reish Ayin Dalet, he gives us all of Hilchos Shabbos. And if you look in mitzvah Reish Ayin Dalet, right near the Toafos Re'ein, note Kuf Ayin Hey, the Yeraim writes that cotton is kosher for Adlokas Neir Shabbos, and he gives basically the same reason as the Rashba right over here, and that is accepted lahalacha. The reason why we light Neir Shabbos with cotton, the poskim also say that you can use cannabis for Adlokas Neir Shabbos. Anyone know what cannabis is?
Cannabis.
What?
Cannabis.
Cannabis, which is called marijuana, right? You could use it for Adlokas Neir Shabbos, will never be the same. Trust me. Right, but why? I don't know how to grow these things. But apparently, it doesn't involve any effort to extract it. So therefore, it's kosher for Hadlokas Neir Shabbos. Now, we're going to stop over here. My understanding is that we don't have Shir on Monday because it's like a yontiv in this country. So we'll have Shir on Wednesday, Mir Tashem. For Wednesday, just make sure you know the machlokas between the Bnei Narvona and the Baalei HaTosafos about using candles for Hadlokas Neir Shabbos. We will question everything that you have assumed your entire life. Hello, Sophia.
I have a question. So when we said the Lavesh belly with the Rosh as far like thing,
yeah.
It's not you say, so you might think it's fine. So what is the problem?
What? Well, the Mishnah tells me not to use lechesh because it's a concern of shemayata, right? In other words, the reason not to use it is not because it's kolayotze mina eitz, but it's just a regular rule of shemayata. That's what emerges from this Gemara. Okay, have a good Shabbos, ladies.